Hello and welcome to the FV English podcast, your one-stop shop for Venezuelan football in English, bringing you fortnightly episodes dedicated to the Venezuelan league, the national teams and the myriad of Venezuelan players around the world.
Tonight, Dominic and I will be breaking down Venezuela's Copa America 2021 campaign. We were due to be joined by Kevin Vivas, but in almost fitting circumstance, he has dropped out last minute with suspected COVID. So obviously wish him all the best and hope he as well. But it is a natural talking point to start, because if you remember in our last episode, even though we recorded it very last minute to be as up-to-date and relative as possible, it was still wrong within 24 hours, out of our control. What happened, Dominic?
Well, I don't want to question the medical care these players received in concern of YouTube pulling our video down. But a lot of players that appeared to be vaccinated apparently weren't vaccinated. gosh, what was it? In the end, what was it, like seven players?
Yeah, seven or eight players.
Tested positive, yeah.
Yeah. And that happened on arrival in Brazil. So they'd left Venezuela. Obviously, they played Uruguay earlier that week. And eight players from the starting 11 that drew 0-0 to Uruguay were then missing for the opening game of Copa America, which was against hosts Brazil. And I think the main talking point that was perhaps overlooked in English media, for example, wasn't just the absences, which they, of course, touched upon, but the severity of the absences to Venezuela's team. As we discussed in the previous podcast, Venezuela were already without a numerous amount of Venezuelan key players. Salomon Rondon was, of course, missing. Jefferson Soteldo was always going to be injured for the first few games. A late absence was Tomás Rincón, the captain, who tested positive for COVID as perhaps one of the first, and Jordan Osorio as well. But then things got worse with these positive COVID results, and against Brazil in the opener wasn't the ideal scenario, but it didn't go too badly.
No, I mean, if I'm remembering correctly, halftime was 0-0 or 1-0?
It was 1-0 halftime.
1-0. So, I mean, and you know, the second goal is a penalty. The third goal was probably the most impressive of the goals, but it was still kind of a late fatigue defense kind of, you know, not a tap in, but it was close to that kind of level of like, oh, well, that happens. Yeah, I mean, the squad performed pretty well, particularly had basically no starters in it. Three of our three MLSers in Cáceres, Moreno, and Martinez, I believe. That was the first time we've seen them. And yeah, I mean, it went pretty well for the majority of the minutes. There were several players that really impressed. It just didn't work out in the defensive moments that mattered. That opening goal, I'm sure we'll talk about more. The opening goal for that game basically happened in every other game we played this international break, and we can break that down more later. But other than a few poor moments, really a solid performance, especially against a team that we were expecting to lose against.
Yeah, and a key part of that defense in the first game in particular was Francisco Lamantia. And he was making his full international debut. He made a cameo off the bench some years ago, but that was his full international debut. And he was making it less than 24 hours after arriving in Brazil. As a result of the eight players that tested positive, 15 were flown in as an emergency delegation, the majority of which were coming from Venezuela's Liga Futebol, as well as Eric Ramirez and Dani Perez from Europe, and Jan Carlos Hurtado, who was already in Brazil. But that was their setting tone for Venezuela's Copa America. A lot of absences, then last-minute COVID positive tests, which were replaced with last-minute reserve players, basically, and quite derogatorily, I guess, but also a very fair description, came in the second game, a 0-0 draw with Colombia, which I don't know if I maybe even enjoyed more than the 2-2 with Ecuador, but the Colombian commentary, I believe, described Venezuela's 11 as their C team. And that was really embraced by the Venezuelan support, because, you know, it wasn't inaccurate. It may have been said with some from the Colombian commentators, and there were some negative comments about Bernardo Manzano in particular, but it was something that Venezuelan support really embraced. It wasn't just we're the underdogs, which Venezuelan football fans are used to. It was more an embattled spirit against a worst case scenario.
Yeah, and I think any upset feelings people had about specifically the comments from Colombian press were more probably rooted in not the comments being untrue, but more that the comments came after really a year of bad interactions between Colombian media and Venezuelan football, you know, with several Caracas players and just a lot of drama that's developed over the last year. So I think that baggage is probably more why there might've been any resistance to that description. Cause you know, I mean, yeah, it is true. None of those guys probably would have been playing anytime soon in any normal situation. So, or been in the roster. So, you know, and like you said, I think any anger that there was quickly turned into a lot of pride that I certainly felt. I saw a lot of other people feel on social media and the players themselves. Because yeah, to the Colombia game that we were just about to talk about, I mean, that is an unthinkable result, really. Particularly the clean sheet aspect of it, to get with, again, defenders who realistically would never be playing in this competition, with Fariñez making his return to the team. So maybe, you know, you would suspect that they're going to be rust, all these sorts of factors. Just a really well-played game. Aside from, I guess, the fact that we didn't score, but realistically, that probably wasn't going to happen. You know, there was a very defensive style. That result, the Ecuador game, which we'll talk about, was more explosive. And there were moments maybe where I cheered more because we scored. But in terms of overall afterwards, how did I feel? The best feeling was probably the Colombia result.
Yeah, it was an unchanged outfield 10. You alluded to it. The one change was Walker Fariñez returning between the sticks for Joel Grato, who wasn't like dropped per se for performances, because I feel he did quite well in the two World Cup qualifiers the week prior, and he wasn't really to blame for the 3-0 defeat to Brazil at all. It was always going to be a very tough ask, and I think a lot of Venezuelan fans, if you said 3-0 before the game, they would have happily taken it. I think some people were worried about it approaching double figures. So Fariñez comes back in and has this incredible performance. SOFA score rating it 9.4 out of 10. The French accounts that cover South American football, not just Venezuelan football, but also the Spanish language Ligue 1 account, were heaping praise on Walker Fariñez. It's something we're used to as people that follow Venezuelan football, but we've got to put Fariñez's performance in context. He's just been on loan in France for a year with Lens. That's been made permanent. But we didn't see him much during the season, did we?
No, a handful of appearances between league and cup play. And most of his league appearances were as late substitutions for, I think, multiple minor injuries that were suffered by their starter. Only started, I believe, one league game against PSG, which was a loss, but it was a tight loss. I want to say 2-1, perhaps. And then he won a cup game, lost a cup game. So, you know, when Grotterol got the starts, I think that was kind of the climax of a conversation that had been going on for a long time about whether or not Fariñez, despite his talents, should be expected to be playing, because he simply isn't playing club football. We saw last year during World Cup qualifiers that was ignored and he started, and not all those games went great. And you know, there was that was a real conversation, and maybe a warranted conversation, I think this whole tournament he really put the emphasis or put the pressure on Lens to really consider him as a starter. I don't know whether or not that's the conversation happening at the club, but obviously then actually signing him now would suggest that kind of conversation. But this tournament, I think he really put the pressure on them to not ignore him.
Of course, and I think it's fair to say if Walker Fariñez was Venezuela's man of the match for the 0-0 draw against Colombia, the 2-2 draw of Ecuador that followed would probably go to Castillo of Caracas. That was his debut. Another Venezuelan player making their debut at the Copa America stage, and not at a young age either, 27 years old, and what a way to announce yourself on the international stage. He gets the equaliser. And then assists the second equaliser in second half stoppage time, scored by Ronald Hernandez. I think it's fair to say a bit of a cult favourite amongst our English-speaking football English followers for his difficult spell in Aberdeen, but he was fondly remembered by fans. And there's even like a, you know, a free Ronnie hashtag campaign that's been followed up with a bring back Ronnie campaign. So that Ecuador game, you said more moments to cheer than Colombia, but Colombia is the game that maybe you look back on and feel more proud about. What was the difference between the two?
Well, I think part of it is just the undeniable pros and cons of a 0-0 draw, even one that benefits you. You obviously aren't going to have like your standard moments to celebrate. So that's going to affect the watching experience when you're kind of spending the whole time just hoping. You're essentially spending the whole game hoping that the main thing people do in your sport isn't going to happen. So that's a very different viewership experience. The Ecuador game, there were a lot of defensive moments that were not as good, obviously leading to the two goals. We had, again, as with the Brazil game, a very sloppy corner defensive job for the opening goal, and then sloppy sort of defense off of a corner for us that led to the second goal. But to your point that you're pointing out with Castillo, some really solid offensive moments, finally saw people converting the chances that we'd actually been creating the whole tournament, but just not been doing good enough in the final third with. He ended up being, at least with final products, basically the offensive player of the tournament. Hernandez obviously gets a lot, deserves credit for like somehow even seeing that opportunity, getting that header in. But creating that opportunity is not really on him. I mean, he makes the run, but Castillo, to see that moment, to see that space, to even have the hope that he's going to make it to the ball, you know, all those different factors, like he's creating that goal and obviously he's scoring the first goal. So yeah, I mean, what a crazy way to make your debut, and probably the reason that he ended up getting the start in the next game, even though there were a lot of players back that probably could have started ahead of him. And you know, we can have discussions about whether or not that was the right call, but he certainly made it clear that he's going to be a future name to consider.
Yeah, and 27 years of age, like I said at the beginning of this segment, so by no means young, but his performances at the Copa America will undoubtedly draw attention from other leagues in the continent and perhaps even MLS. But as you said, he is one of the players, well, he was the only midfielder in that game, in the central midfielder three anyway, to get the full 90, but then was one to keep his position against Peru. One who didn't keep his position was Brujo Martinez, who had been playing out of position in the first three games, sort of on the right flank, which he had previous experience when he was at Zulia, but MLS fans will know him as a midfield enforcer for Philadelphia Union. Like you said, we can debate whether that was the right decision, but ultimately, Venezuela went into that final group game still with the ability to qualify, not just qualify, but with the ability to finish second. They had Peru. If they beat Peru, they would have qualified guaranteed. If they drew, they needed Ecuador to lose to Brazil, which many people were expecting. But if they lost, it was going to need Brazil to absolutely hammer Ecuador to have any hope of going through. So hope was still high. And one thing that's changed since we last spoke, since we recorded the pod just 3 or 4 days before the Copa America started, is the emergence of this meme that has just taken Venezuelan football by storm. Mano tengo fe, brother, I have faith. And I wanted to ask Kevin, but obviously Kevin's not here, and I think you'll give just as much insight to this question. But I've noticed as an outsider, memes have this cornerstone position, really, this cornerstone feature in Venezuelan football. It's not like anything I've seen before. They seem so predominant and so important to Venezuelan football, the online culture, obviously. Why do memes carry such weight and are so important as reference points in Venezuelan football?
Yeah, it's interesting. The way you're phrasing that, once you said it, I immediately understood what you were saying. I hadn't really thought of it that way before, but you're right. And particularly like Simpsons references and all that kind of stuff. It's just like everywhere. But Kevin could probably give more depth in his answer than me. But what I will say is I do think it's funny because I think part of the evolution that the meme, the specific meme you're talking about, the Mano Tengo Fe meme, is the part of the evolution it went through with this tournament is that meme's kind of sarcastic. And it really converted into this new thing with this tournament because that faith was getting answered a lot. And so I do think that probably that meme culture complements the sort of underdog feeling that surrounds Venezuelan football, and the need for a certain amount of like self-awareness and self-criticalness. Beyond that, I don't know if there's some, you know, deep internet history of how that developed, but I do think that that aspect of the fan culture does, it makes sense as a partner to the way the results in the football tend to go. And it's proven pretty funny, I have to say. I mean, there, some of the things these like accounts make have me like laughing for a while. for a fan culture that has its highs and lows, that's probably, that might be one of my favorite online, at least online, one of my favorite like characteristics.
So I think that meme really hit the its crescendo, like, you know, heading into the Peru game against all odds, and to really can't reiterate this enough. So I'm going to say it again. Venezuela were without Yordan Osorio in defense, Thomas Rincon in midfield, Yangel Herrera ultimately missed the first game, came off the bench against Colombia just to get injured again. So without Yangel Herrera, they were out Soteldo until the final 20 minutes of the pregame, without Savarino for the first three games, without Otero, without Josef Martinez, without Mikel Villanueva, without John Chancellor, without Roberto Rosales. We really can't overstate how severely impeded Venezuela were. Just imagine Brazil without Neymar, Casemiro, Thiago Silva, Richarlison. It was like that, apart from instead of having Gabriel Jesus waiting in the wings, you've got players from the Venezuelan local league, which is better than a lot of people think, but it's not comparable to, you know, right, Barcelona B team, Brazil B team, Real Madrid B team players. Like, it's just incomparable. So against all odds, heading into that final game against Peru, could still qualify. And a lot has been said about the Copa America format this year, where two groups of five and four from each group going through. And I've even seen tweets today of people saying like 2 weeks and 10 games just to get rid of Venezuela and Bolivia. Like, you know, insinuating you didn't need that to come to that conclusion. But going into the Peru game, Venezuela could have finished second in the group. Obviously, that isn't what happened. Take it from there, Dominic. What did happen?
A very mixed first half of football. I think we had talked about, or maybe even one of us, maybe you had tweeted that, I remember having some sort of interaction with you about, you know, it did feel like Pacero wasn't sure how offensive he wanted to change the team into being, and you know, how defensive he wanted to keep it. And 0-0 at halftime, and then second half kicks off with some, you know, feeling some momentum. Obviously, that's not a horrible scoreline for halftime. And we concede our third of what feels like the exact same goal, just being cloned over and over again, with Brazil and Ecuador. And then this game where there's a corner for Peru. And it's a decent ball. It kind of arrives sort of along the line of the six-yard box, as I believe the other two did for those other two goals. And just horribly handled by the defenders. There's some deflections. The ball finds itself more at the center of the six-yard box, and someone's there to tap it in. In this case, he kind of skies it into the ceiling of the net, so he didn't tap it in, but more or less it's happened. And, you know, it's a really annoying way to go behind in a game that otherwise it felt like we were at least in. And the same goes for those first two games. But it keeps happening. And then from there was no equalizer for Venezuela. There were substitutions made to try to keep it competitive, to try to get back in the game. Otero came on, Soteldo came on, Jose Martinez came on, but it never quite clicked. Even the players that came on, they had moments where it's like, oh, okay, this is the Otero effect, this is the Soteldo effect, but it, then it wouldn't really turn into anything. And, you know, it peters out to a 1-0 win for Peru, which ended up not necessarily even being the thing that killed our chances, because Brazil failed to beat Ecuador. So a late equalizer would not have helped us, actually. But yeah, you know, it was for me, the result in itself wasn't necessarily disappointing. What was disappointing for me was how they scored on us. Because all through this tournament, we talked repeatedly about that same corner goal we've been giving up. To a degree, even back in the Bolivia game, their first goal came from almost that same sort of situation. It's just that the actual strike came from the edge of the box. But repeatedly, this whole international break, this multi-month break, there's been goals conceded in a very similar way off of mildly decent corner balls that we just don't defend well.
Yeah, and it was the worst way to start the second half, because not only did Venezuela go down to Peru, but Ecuador got the equalizer against Brazil, and suddenly it went from halftime, Venezuela are going through as it stands, to 10, 15 minutes later, Venezuela need to win and, you know, from behind. And perhaps even if the players themselves on the pitch didn't know, it's hard to imagine that the likes of Sotelo and Otero, by the time they came on, the message hadn't got through that two goals were needed. It's, you know, it's almost a certainty. But what Pesero did do was, for all games, go with a five-man defence, a 5-4-1 formation. That didn't change. What did change in the last game against Peru was the personnel. And the reason, for people that weren't following or weren't following closely, was the eight players that tested positive for COVID on arrival in Brazil had finished their isolation period and were now available for selection again. So the big debate on social media amongst the Venezuelan football fans is whether those returning players should have come in for the Peru game or were the right ones chosen to come in. One thing was clear, in my opinion, something needed to be added in attack. But that isn't where the bulk of Pesero's changes came. He kept the five-man defence, but changed four of the faces. It was only Luis Mago, who probably wouldn't have been a starter had it not been for the initial absences in defence of, firstly, Jordan Osorio, and then secondarily, Wilker Angel. But he was the mainstay. Adrian Martinez, I think, harshly lost his place in the starting back line, as did Alexander Gonzalez. And that was that. They were the two standouts, really. Sema Velasquez had also lost his place, but he didn't start the first game. La Mantilla did. So I think that's, I think, for me, it wasn't necessarily the faces themselves that lost that last game. It was the disruption to what Venezuela had built. Because for me, Pesero had, whether intentionally or not, created a very strong, cohesive unit in his team that also had this very empowering narrative amongst the Venezuelan support. I think Venezuelan fans saw themselves in the team. This was a team like battling against all odds. Everyone had written them off, perhaps even before they arrived in Brazil and then got eight more absences. But they held themselves strong. They showed Venezuelan football in the league in a good light. And then against Peru, ultimately, I think maybe the wrong players, maybe it's calmed down now because a couple of days have passed, but maybe the wrong players had the blame laid at their door. Sort of the onus on them to just come in and get the result after being absent for the first three games was perhaps harsh. But in that first half, we had Jefferson Savarino with two really good strikes. The first one was tipped for a corner. The second one was parried back into the path of Sergio Cordova, who then headed narrowly wide. And that sort of became the narrative of Venezuela in attack that night. And as you say, it just took that one defensive lapse from a corner to undo them. And that's what dictated it. So sort of circling back to the meme, but a serious question, do you still have faith in Pesero to guide Venezuela through the rest of 2021? It's going to be, as far as I can remember, and if I'm correct, September, October, and November all having double dates for the World Cup qualifying stages. So the end of between now and the end of the year is another six games of qualifying. At that point, after another six games, Venezuela will be 2/3 through their qualifying campaign. Do you think faith should be kept with Pesetta?
Yes. I certainly don't think that there would likely be any reasonable opportunity to change him out for someone else that would benefit the situation. I think he showed a very impressive ability to adapt during this competition. You know, we both have some criticisms about maybe some of the things that happened in that last match, but I think we've all gotten kind of used to this crazy year that we've had, to the point where we're not maybe acknowledging how bizarre of a situation he found himself in as a manager.
Yeah.
Like, when does that happen? When does that happen where you go into a competition thinking you have a set of players, then you get 15 new guys in, and then a couple games, oh wait, now a bunch of those guys have left. Now I have 6-7 guys that I didn't have. You know, the back and forth of all that, I don't know if people are acknowledging just how probably bizarre that is to manage in your head. I know it's his job, but it's also not something that the vast majority of professional managers will have ever dealt with in their entire life. So, you know, he showed that he can create mentality and rhythm in this team. I think he did a lot of good for himself and for his reputation, and also the way he spoke about the tournament as time passed. I think he did very well to describe the situation, describe the motivation behind the team, describe what he was trying to achieve. And I still think there were some positives before this tournament with how World Cup qualifiers had gone that already made me not feel the need for him to be fired or anything like that. So, yeah, I mean, I still think that we have a shot. I think that, you know, when we did that original video that ended up being horribly inaccurate to the one we talked about ended up playing, we talked about whether or not the Copa America would end up being kind of a practice.
Yeah.
And I mentioned that I kind of didn't like that idea because, you know, I want them to try for everything. And that discussion became irrelevant because at a certain point it became clear that it's not like we were going to win it. But I do think that he showed he showed an ability to handle interesting situations and strange situations. And he did it all without, even when all those guys returned, still basically with half of his starters missing.
Yeah.
So that gives me, to use the word at hand, that gives me some faith in his ability to manage the different situations, difficult situations, which is realistically the bare minimum of what I need out of the manager.
Yeah.
So I was impressed more than I was disappointed.
Yeah, my two worries, and they are worries, they're not criticisms because they're not his fault, is that since he's been in the job, he's not had the ability to play friendlies. Every game has been a competitive game. Every game's had meaning. And he's not had much opportunity for training camps either. And the training camps that he has had were domestic based. And, you know, in hindsight, it's a great job he had them because...
Right.
It allowed him to make an informed decision when it came to calling up the emergency players at the last minute.
I think that's a very underrated fact. I mean, I think we really have to consider the fact that that might have been a huge contribution to how well this went.
Yeah.
The fact that he had been quietly training with several of these players on and off for what, a year or two, you know, a year and a half, whatever, however long it was. I mean, that has to have been a factor.
Yeah.
So good on him for he didn't probably know it was going to happen, but good on him for doing that. But anyway, sorry.
Absolutely. No, you're bang on in it. It was actually the point you raised at the very beginning of the Copa America. As soon as this happened, you said in the group chat, you said, well, it's a good job that he did do those counts back in March, which, you know, you were right to say. I said that they were pointless. But, hindsight is a wonderful thing, and you were right and I was wrong. But yeah, my second worry is... linked to the fact that he's not had any friendlies to experiment with, but also he lost the ability to even do that with the Copa America. I don't think he's any further down the line in really building an identity for Venezuela to play with. Maybe that has been expressed on the training pitch. I'm not saying that he hasn't communicated an identity to the players, but are we really expecting to see a 5-4-1 in the World Cup qualifiers, for example? That wouldn't bode well. You know, I think how Venezuela played in the Copa America had a big element of damage limitation to it. Didn't want to get humiliated or embarrassed, and Venezuela definitely were not humiliated or embarrassed in that Copa. They did very well for themselves. But I just don't feel like anything, and again, out of his hands because of the absences and COVID, but I don't think he even gained much more insight from the Copa than perhaps identifying some new players for the fold that are actually good enough to incorporate. For example, Adrian Martinez, who's at Deportivo La Guaira, did very well for himself. Brujo Martinez, you know, he only debuted very recently for the national team. I think he's now arguably got a case for a starting 11 spot for the national team. So I think maybe he learned a few things about new players that he could consider, but I don't really think any ability to experiment or impose an identity onto Venezuela was able to take place, because that isn't an 11, or perhaps even close to an 11, that you'd hope to see in September.
Yeah, no, that's very fair. And it even connects probably to something to note with the Peru game, which is that you had these guys coming back more or less starters or at least common second string players. And they were playing in a formation that they would never usually be playing. But back to your point. Yeah, I mean, that is a concern. And it was something I was even thinking about in general. I don't know if he's ever managed a full strength team in a game, because throughout all of the qualifiers so far, every break, someone's hurt. So Teldo's hurt, Rondon's hurt, Osorio's hurt, someone, often more than one person.
I think the closest we've got to it was the 2-1 victory against Chile.
Yeah, that break was probably but even
Rondon
there was at least someone injured. Was Osorio out for those games? I think maybe. I mean, there were. Soteldo was only on the bench. He was coming out of an injury. You know, almost every minute he's managed the team, there's been asterisks of people that are missing or coming just back from injury.
Mourinho's wasn't playing at club level.
Yeah.
I don't think that the Colombia and Paraguay games at the beginning of World Cup qualifying, I think that really did raise question marks over whether Fariña should be the number one, because I think it was clear that he was out of match practice.
Yeah, definitely. So it's a completely understandable concern. It is a concern. You know, when is he going to have an opportunity to even have all the right people in the camp, but then from there have time or realistically not have time, as you were saying, to build a culture around that group, a consistent culture on that group. He didn't get a chance to do that. He built a separate culture, which was a very entertaining, heartwarming one, but it's a side chapter to what realistically is going to happen for the next year, because most of these guys probably aren't even going to be in the roster for the rest of the year. So yeah, it's a concern. At the same time, I guess it's like a double-edged thing, because it's a concern, but at the same time, it does give that sort of hope of like, well, for all the negatives we've had over the last year, yeah, keep in mind, he's never really had a fair shake during those results. So you can hope that when he has a full healthy group, maybe things are different, but who knows?
Yeah. No, I'm with you on that. And it's like you said, I don't know how long more in our lives, just day to day, we will continue to have to contextualize everything against COVID. It really is that way. So to summarize Venezuela's Copa America, it started with a 3-0 defeat to Brazil in the opening game of Copa America, followed up by a 0-0 draw with Colombia and a 2-2 draw with Ecuador, twice coming from behind, thanks to headed goals from Edson Castillo of Caracas FC and Ronald Hernandez of Atlanta United in MLS. And the last game was a 1-0 defeat to Brazil, 1-0 defeat to Peru, which ultimately eliminated them from Copa America. If Venezuela had qualified, they would have been facing a Miguel Almirón-less Paraguay. He's injured. So it really is a case of what could have been, particularly with all those returning players. For example, you know, we didn't even see Josef Martinez in the end, because even though he returned from the positive test, a muscle injury kept him out of that final game. But I am determined not to finish the podcast on a negative note, because for as much as Venezuela did finish bottom of their group and didn't win a single game for the first time since 2004, there were positives, individual positives, as well as team identity. I've spoken about an absence of identity, so I now can't say team identity. But like there was a determination and things that fans could connect with in that tournament. So not necessarily players, but feel free to say players. But what would you say were your three personal highlights from the Copa America? And then I'll give mine.
My first was simply the fact that there was no attempt to surrender the competition. It never felt like, you know, it never felt like there was a danger of us giving up. That was extremely encouraging, considering the immense state obstacles that were put in our way. Secondly, you know, the spotlight that got put on Liga Footvey and its talent at such a big stage, international stage, that was great to see, both for the individual players, but also for just the reputation of the league and the quality of the league, to see that these guys are in there waiting for a chance to impress. You know, there were some guys that I think are going to stick around. You know, we talked about how some of these like domestic league players probably aren't going to be back in the roster. There were some guys that I do think are probably going to get called up in the future, like Brujo Martinez, that finally got a chance to like get real minutes and show what they can bring, that impressed immensely, in my opinion. In his case, he practically played like four different positions in each game, you know, in the same game, and he was everywhere. And so I'm very optimistic about, you know, what that will bring for the future and bring for his potential opportunities with the national team.
Yeah, and I think my three slightly overlapping. My first highlight was, I think, the MLS contingent of Venezuela's team. I think particularly Brujo Martinez and Cáceres have really stamped their name on any squad in the near future. I think they're essentially undroppable from a 23-man squad, and very much have made a case for starting 11 here on in. Particularly, I think, without a doubt, Cáceres is in the 11 now, although perhaps Brujo had a better Copa America campaign. My second positive is, I think, Walker Fariñas cannot be ignored for the number one spot at club level next season in France. So that's really promising. And I think my third highlight was, I genuinely felt it was a fairly united support behind Venezuela. Journalists, social media, fan comments, you know, individual players came under criticism for different reasons, but I think in general people really did unite behind Venezuela, and that isn't always the case with the football and or the domestic league. And I think it was also good to see a lot of domestic league players getting opportunity and surprising people that perhaps underestimated the quality of their own league. So they were my three positives. And I hope that in 3 months' time, when it's the end of September, we'll be talking about some positive results in World Cup qualifying, because fifth place is, I believe, only 3 points away. So, you know, I've already had people say qualifying's over for Venezuela, isn't it? But we're only a third way in and we're only 3 points off of fifth.
A lot of games we can win, a lot of games we can draw. I understand the the negativity, but we got to stretch, and some of which home games, we got to stretch where we're playing Paraguay, Bolivia, Ecuador, Peru. And I know some of those games didn't go well during the Copa America just now, but we're playing games that we could definitely win if we have the right squad. It's completely still possible. It's completely still possible.
Dominic, as always, thank you very much for your comments and your insight. It's been a pleasure. And thank you to everyone that was listening. This was Fútbol English's summary of Venezuela at Copa America 2021. Thank you.